Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, Katie Godden, and the team from The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. This week, we're talking to someone from the world of e-learning. I'm delighted to welcome Emma Scott to the podcast. Thank you for joining us, Emma. Do you want to introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit more about your background and the journey you've taken so far?
Yep. Hello. Thank you for having me. So my name is Emma and I am the Learning and Development Media Manager for Quantum Rise. And I specialise in digital learning, e-learning and instructional design. So my journey with learning and development really started as I graduated university. So I actually did a degree in design, in illustration. And I think throughout my time at university, I was kind of sort of subconsciously setting myself up for a career in digital learning design without even knowing about it. All of my work during my time at university was digital illustration, and it was always based on science or fact or sort of technical things. So when I finished university, I really had absolutely no idea where to go. I didn't know what to do. All I knew is that I wanted it to be something creative. And I scrolled through pages and pages of Indeed, as most graduates do, and just got rejected from many design jobs and found a job which was for a creative consultant. And it was in a training company. Now, at this point, I had no idea about the world of learning and development, about training, never really considered it as a career or as an industry, but I saw that the job was creative and applied for it and got it. So this first kind of tentative step into learning and development was pretty much using my creative brain to come up with interesting and engaging activities that would be put into training sessions. So this was back in the days when face-to-face was very much the predominant way of training, and we mainly focused on large-scale training events with a few modular things as well. So these were, you know, it was really exciting. This was traveling around Europe and getting to do these really amazing large-scale training activities and working with a production team. And for me, as a creative and a logical thinker, it was really cool. And it was nice to be able to inject a little bit of fun back into learning. I think as adults, we see learning as very much just a kind of transactional process. It has to be done in order to get somewhere. And we forget that actually learning should be something that's enjoyable. And this job was very much about putting that enjoyment back into learning. So I did that for a couple of years and then fell pregnant with my first child. And quickly realised that sort of doing a lot of travelling and going across Europe and being away for weeks on end was just not going to be viable with a young child. And I felt it was time to kind of move on to the next thing. So once my maternity leave was finished, I left that role and moved into an administrator position. So this was with Virgin Care, which is now HCRG Care Group. And for some people, this might feel or felt like a bit of a step back. So it was with their training department and it was a learning management system administrator. But on reflection, I think this was a really valuable period of my training career. It allowed me to see the journey that learners go on for booking training. I was very much involved in adding training to the learning management system, looking at training needs analysis, identifying where there's a need for training, dealing with people that were actually using the system, and the frustrations and the concerns and the things that they found annoying. So it really gave me that insight into the limitations of a learning management system and the journey that a learner goes on. I mean, I was using it as an employee myself, but because I was using it as an administrator, I was very much clued up on it and found the process easy. Whereas this enabled me to see it as somebody that potentially would find it difficult. So that really, I think, was invaluable in terms of me moving on to designing e-learning and having that awareness of the limitations of a learning management system and some of the frustrations that people might have when accessing and using e-learning. So again, I did that job for around about 9 months and then started to miss that creative element. It really didn't have that sort of training design element to it. And I was really itching to get back into that. And I was very fortunate that a position for an e-learning developer came up in the same company in the same department. And I was fortunate to be given the role. And this was really the first time I'd ever stepped into the world of digital learning and e-learning without having completed them myself as an employee in various companies. So yeah, this was completely new to me. So the first thing I had to do was jump straight onto YouTube and figure out how to use this software that I'd never touched before. And for the first few months of this role, I was mainly just kind of reformatting existing packages and getting to know the software and strengthening my technical ability. And it was only sort of after coming back from maternity leave with my second child that I realized in this role that I was really lacking in the instructional design element. So by this point, I had the design background, the creative eye, the technical ability to produce e-learnings and to produce, you know, fairly good e-learning. But when it came to actually creating a package from scratch, I was really lacking in the instructional design element. And it was holding my e-learnings back. So in November last year, I enrolled on a diploma course in digital learning design. And this wasn't just e-learning focused, this was focused on all areas of digital learning. And that was so useful in filling in those instructional design gaps and being able to make me aware of how people learn and the things that can hinder learning. And I finished that course in April this year. And during this time as well, whilst completing the course, I was learning a lot more about my practice and putting ideas on LinkedIn around the way that we can stretch and improve e-learning, these ideas of what we could do and what is possible. And this sparked a conversation with Erica from Quantum Rise, who wanted to know more and wanted to collaborate. And originally I was going to join them as a freelancer to develop this new kind of concept of e-learning. But after kind of lots of discussions back and forth, they decided to take me on full time. So now I currently work with Hayley and Erica at Quantum Rise, and we develop and sort of push the boundaries of what digital learning can do. And that is pretty much where I'm at now.
Well, thank you very much, Emma. It sounds like you've been on an interesting journey so far. So why don't we start with kind of what is traditional e-learning and why do you think it's no longer necessarily the best solution for people?
Yeah, so traditional e-learning is what we've all experienced for the past however many years. Most of us have completed an e-learning at some point within our careers, and it usually follows the same pattern of lots of content, click and read. There's a few interactions in there usually, multiple choice question, a drag and drop exercise. And the end, there is an assessment, 80% pass mark, and then that's you done. They're very much seen as a checkbox exercise. So it's usually e-learnings are there so that organisations or L&D departments can check you off as being compliant in a certain skill base or certain area. Traditional e-learning is just e-learning as a sense. E-learning hasn't moved forward. It is as it is since its beginning, really. It's also not engaging. I mean, I don't think I've ever done an e-learning where I've felt truly excited and engaged to complete it, regardless of the subject matter. So I think the problem with e-learning is that it's not moved forward. So when the pandemic hit, we saw the shift of face-to-face sessions into virtual classroom sessions. We've seen the development of learning methods like micro-learning, video-based learning. But e-learning has remained static. It's not developed, it's not moved forward. It always and still has this perception of being those lengthy, click and read, compliance-based exercises that just tick you off as being able to do something. So in order to change that, I think we need to move with modern workforces, with modern learning. We know that e-learning is successful. It has a 60 to 80% higher retention rate than face-to-face sessions. So we know that it does work to a certain extent. But our attention spans nowadays, the way we learn nowadays, is so different. You know, we've got apps like TikTok where you can scroll through 10-second videos. We don't have the attention span now to sit and truly engage with something that is, you know, 30 minutes of reading and clicking. E-learning needs to adapt and move forward with other methods of digital learning and with learning as a whole. And I think this mainly starts with not only not seeing the software as a limitation, but also changing that perception of e-learning so that when people hear they have to go and complete an e-learning, they don't think, oh gosh, you know, that's half an hour of my life gone and I'm just going to skip through to the end. And instructional designers and e-learning developers are aware of this issue. I mean, I've completed e-learnings that have lockable sections. So you can't go to section two until you've completed section one. So they are aware of this issue. They're aware that people will skip through an e-learning to get to the assessment just to pass and just to finish. So instead of trying to then put more limitations on an e-learning, we need to be asking ourselves, okay, why are people doing this? Why are people just skipping to the end and not fully engaging with the e-learning? And that is the issue that needs to be solved instead of just trying to further restrict people. I think with all these other methods of digital learning and with the rise in virtual classrooms, if e-learning doesn't adapt and move forward as well, it's just going to get left behind and it's not going to be a viable method of learning anymore.
I think you kind of touched on that previously as well in regards to kind of learning management systems and platforms that kind of learning teams use that restrict the ability to have that kind of great content on there. Because I know there's still a number of kind of more traditional learning systems where you're only able to upload like kind of SCORM courses and you can't upload any other types of content. So therefore, people are trying to kind of put together long courses in a kind of SCORM content as opposed to the, like those individual bite sized bits. So I think there's a bit of that as well. It's we have to change the content, but we also have to change kind of the way that we're doing it as well. So how can the role of an e-learning developer influence the change in the learning that's provided to people?
I think there's two separate responsibilities here with learning and development departments, and I think with every industry, particularly now that we're out of the pandemic, people are taking on extra responsibilities within their role that they maybe wouldn't have beforehand. You know, businesses have had to cut costs, which means the resource that they would have had before, particularly within learning and development, they don't have now. So I think first it's important to define the difference and the necessity of an instructional designer and an e-learning developer. So an e-learning developer would traditionally be responsible for the execution. So they would get the storyboards from an instructional designer that outlines exactly, you know, the way the e-learning should flow, the content, and they would be responsible for building it, for bringing it to life, you know, for sourcing the media, doing the programming, all of that kind of thing. The instructional designer would be the person that would write the training, you know, would know the learning outcomes, would map the training to the learning outcomes, write the content, work with the SME. Now, what we're seeing is e-learning developers having to take on the instructional design role. And from my own experience, I've also had to do that. And I think what learning and development departments are missing is that they are very different skill sets. An e-learning developer can learn the technical ability and possess that creative mindset, but if they lack the instructional design knowledge, if they're trying to create a piece of training, they could create something that looks amazing and does function quite well, but lacks that substance and lacks the overall end game of meeting the actual learning. If you flip that on the other side, an instructional designer might be able to, you know, map out a really good piece of training in terms of it being accurate with the content and meeting the learning outcomes, but they may miss, you know, the opportunity to push the boundaries or the opportunity to add a bit of creativity in there. So if we're expecting e-learning developers to now sort of do the job of both, they need to be given that adequate training and they need to be filling in, as I did with the diploma, filling in those gaps where they're lacking that instructional design knowledge. Now, I think e-learning developers have a responsibility to keep a curious mindset. So curiosity within creating e-learning is how you're going to constantly want to innovate and constantly want to move things forward. I think when you work in a software for so long, you can easily get caught up in its limitations. So, for example, in Articulate Storyline, you've got templates of interactions like, you know, your drag and drop exercises, your multiple choice questions. And it can be easy to see this as the limit of what you can do. So these are your interactions, you work your content around these. Whereas the software should be the foundation and you should see it as the beginnings of what's possible. But as an e-learning developer, you need to be curious and creative and looking to see how far you can stretch those boundaries and what is possible. And some of this can come from actually having an open mind and exploring other avenues. So looking at things like user experience design, that can heavily influence the way you design a learner's pathway, the way they move through the e-learning. We very much are used to linear e-learnings where you do it step by step by step and the way you move through it is controlled. But why do we have to do it that way? We don't. You know, when you move through an app, you don't necessarily do it that way. You'd go in and out as you please. So why don't we apply that same thinking to e-learning? I think an e-learning developer has a big role in influencing that instructional design and providing that creativity and providing that blue sky thinking. You know, think of the most amazing idea that you'd love to do and then filter it back dependent on, you know, is it meeting the learning outcomes and is it possible, is it worth the time, do you have the technology and the software? So I think there's two things here really. It's ensuring that you've got the right resource to be able to move e-learning forward, that good instructional design and also that good technical knowledge, but also it's making sure you've got people in these roles that possess that creative and that curious mindset and have that drive to want to create amazing things as well.
Do you think the software that we're using, because we've kind of touched on the like learning platform side of things, and perhaps that could evolve in some elements, because obviously you've got like more modern learning platforms out there that are kind of do enable you to do a bit more and things like that, but do you think the software that people are using to create online courses, that needs to evolve more to be less restrictive
yes, definitely. I think the problem now is that you've got software such as Articulate Rise, where it does make it very easy to create online training. You know, it's really simple to use. You just type your text in, add a few blocks, and it, you know, Bob's your uncle, it's done. And this is, again, a really good example of where people are seeing something shiny and new that's easy to use and going, oh, anybody can create e-learning. You know, you just log onto this website, chuck in your content, and there you go. But they're missing that instructional design that, you know, creating an e-learning is so much more than just shoving content into a new platform, into a digital platform. And I think we see this a lot when people translate face-to-face sessions into e-learning courses. People think that it is just a quick, just switching it over exercise, when actually they're completely different entities that need a different mindset. You know, face-to-face or virtual classroom sessions are very discussion-based, and you get that organic, spontaneous conversation that drives that engagement. Whereas with e-learning, you're manufacturing this. You have to see those gaps where there would have been a discussion point and fill that with engagement, fill that with interaction. So I think this is why you see these e-learnings where it's just reams and reams of text with a template activity in there, because it's lacking that instructional design of going, okay, this is the content, this is the learning outcomes. What can we do to make this as interactive and engaging as possible? You know, can this become a scenario exercise that feels relevant? And definitely there's loads of platforms like this out now. Rise is just one example, but we've got other kind of create your own content platforms that are, I think, even encouraging L&D departments to allow people to create training that don't actually have the right skill set for it, particularly SMEs, for example. So subject matter experts, they obviously have a wealth of knowledge, and they're going to put everything into a Rise package because they, in their mind, everybody needs to know everything. But that then doesn't lead to a training course that is engaging, encourages learning retention. And you could give people all the knowledge in the world, but if it's not fun and exciting and engaging to do, they're not going to retain it. So it becomes pointless. I think it's seeing the value in good instructional design as a foundation.
You touched on like SMEs and obviously kind of having that skill set to be able to create content, etc. Do you think learning and development teams are kind of missing a trick there, where they could upskill some of their teams internally to perhaps give them that skill set so they are able to kind of create content? Because as budgets get squeezed and things like that, and learning departments might get smaller, or you've got more of workload on there, you might need extra resource and might not be able to kind of fit that into your budget, but you might have the right kind of knowledge there, but not the skill set to create that content. So do you think learning and development teams should be more responsible to kind of go out and kind of teach those teams that are the experts in whatever field it is, to be able to create some engaging content? And like you said, like, know your audience, because you can overwhelm someone with tons of knowledge, but actually they only need to know 5% of that or whatever. Do you think it's their responsibility to be doing that?
No. And yeah, I completely empathize and understand that, you know, budgets are super tight and people are having to adapt to this. They're having to take on things they wouldn't normally do. I think the issue with trying to sort of upskill an SME to be an instructional designer is that you run the risk of overloading people. I think depending on the industry that you're working in, the SME will often have a full-time job alongside being an SME. And SMEs that I've worked with previously were, for example, I worked in healthcare, so I might be getting knowledge from a safeguarding officer, for example. They've got a full-time job they're doing, and they're helping me out by using a little bit of that time to provide me with the knowledge. So these people generally don't have the time to be writing the training themselves. Also, I think instructional design as a role and as a skill set takes so much more than just being able to map content out. It takes having an understanding of learning preferences, of how people learn, of the journey that people go on, of how to keep people engaged. And it's a whole other skill set in itself. And I think if you try and upskill every SME, you run the risk of people just getting overwhelmed, because then you'd still need an e-learning developer as well. So then do you then fall into the trap of going, well, these people have got to be the experts, they've also got to write the training, and they've also got to produce and develop it? You know, for me, that feels like a lot for one individual to be able to do. If within a department you take the time to really focus in and develop one person as an e-learning developer and an instructional designer, they will possess that skill set and that knowledge to be able to work with the SMEs and filter out the key points and structure all that knowledge and structure all that content. I think here as well, though, there's something to be said about using learning management systems versus learner experience platforms. So learning management systems, like we've covered, are very much focused around the administrators. They're built in a way that it means administrators can upload content easily and track compliance, track completion. They're not built with the learner in mind and with the learner experience in mind, which is, from my experience, why we found lots of issues with people not being able to find training. In a learning management system, people are assigned their training, they complete their training, and that's it. With a learning experience platform, the training is very much decided by the learner. They can still be assigned, you know, courses or training or subjects, for example, but the way they learn is chosen by them. And learning experience platforms are almost like a bank, a library of content. So they're not necessarily finished e-learnings, but you might have one subject matter that has videos, podcasts in it, e-learning, a virtual classroom, all of which contribute to giving the knowledge over and meeting the learning outcomes, but the learner has the choice in how they engage with it. So I think instead of trying to force people into boxes and saying, okay, SMEs now have to be instructional designers and e-learning developers, which will completely overwhelm them and really just not be viable with their workload, we should be thinking about, okay, how do we move our whole process forward? How do we move the whole thing forward, including e-learning, so that it feels not only quicker to create and produce, but also learner-centered as opposed to, you know, the administrator-centered as opposed to the department-centered?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that's where some learning teams kind of fall down, because they're not putting the learner at the centre of that journey, whether it doesn't matter what system you're necessarily using, but you have to have them in mind from the offset, because otherwise, if you're doing it from an admin focus, you're kind of you're helping a small percentage of the team rather than kind of everyone else that's using it. So no, I completely agree with that. But if you were to have like a blank sheet of paper and start learning over, or I guess, what do you think learning would look like in the future if you're able to do that?
I think going forward, digital learning is going to be rapid. I think the change and the development of it is going to be rapid. We've seen an increase in things like micro learning, video based learning, scenario based learning, mobile learning. I think flexibility, preference are going to be key in the future of learning. People don't have the time now to be able to sit to their desk, regardless of if they're at home or shared office. They don't have time to be sat for half an hour focusing on an e-learning course. Learning needs to feel that it adapts around them as opposed to them adapting around it. It also needs to have this relevance. It needs to be something that people feel they're getting something from. And part of that is down to appealing to the way that they learn. So I think sort of further expanding on the learning experience platform, you know, they house multiple methods of learning that can suit accessibility, you know, neurodivergence, all of this kind of thing. And I think learning is going to have to move that way in order to stay relevant and to keep people wanting to do it. Particularly with digital learning, we've got the ability here and the option to be able to cater to so many people that maybe wouldn't have been able to access learning before, by providing a podcast, for example, that meets the learning outcomes. Somebody could listen to it on their commute into work or while walking the dog, as opposed to feeling stressed and anxious about having to fit this virtual classroom into their day. I think learning now is very much going to have to move towards being learner-centered. It's no longer about the needs necessarily of the business and the department, but the needs of the individual and what they need to get. It's all well and good doing things like training or learning needs analysis and identifying that you need more of X course, but everybody's got their individual agenda. You know, we've all got our individual goals, and learning needs to be able to be keep up with that. We need to have almost a bank of learning that people can choose to do based on their individual needs and goals and preferences. I think gone are the days of putting people into two categories, you know, face-to-face or e-learning. That's always been the two methods of learning. Now we need to open our minds up to the fact that generations are changing as well. We've got Generation Z that learn in a completely different way to the generation before me. You know, they use YouTube, they just Google things, they even find things from social media, things like TikTok. We've got to embrace that rather than see it as something that's, you know, a hindrance. And the good thing about digital learning is that we have that ability to do it. We can create interactive videos, we can foster social learning and encourage people to share thoughts and ideas on social media platforms, for example. We need to break learning out of its structure and its box and really engage with what is possible now. Otherwise, you risk people moving on. It's about a retention thing as well. You know, people are more than ever focused on development, and there's statistics to back up that even without, you know, their manager or their boss telling them they need to complete learning, people are motivated to go and develop themselves within their careers, and they will leave employers if that level of development is not provided. So L&D departments need to keep up with this. They need to be providing that resource so that people can engage with learning, even when they're not being told they have to, but they have the resource to be able to do it, which again is where I think this kind of content library, this curation of content comes in, not seeing learning as something that has to always be created in-house. You know, there's so many good TED Talks out there, articles from other training companies, you know, from other learning designers, from graduates, that provide really amazing insight on different subject matters. We can harness this and actually encourage people to see learning as something that's can continuously happen, whether you recognize it or not.
No, I definitely agree with that. I think we've got a lot of resource out there, and I think it kind of comes back to those learning teams and how they actually position that and how they actually create that experience for the learners in their organisations. Because like you said, you can have a blend of kind of that library feel where you can search through, you can find your own content, because you might be curious about learning a topic that's not necessarily in your department, but you still need to have those kind of more prescripted learning plans that people work their way through, because of you're always going to have things like compliance, for example. So no matter what you where you go, you're always going to have to do fire safety, manual handling, whatever it is, you know, and that's always going to be the way. But again, yeah, I think you should have that ability and that choice to have other learnings, and it shouldn't be down to kind of people to go, oh yes, you are able to go onto that face-to-face course, or yes, you can go onto that course, etc. So just one last thing. So we understand that there's a mindset that's needed to change. How do you think e-learning can be made more exciting again?
I think this is down to our perception of e-learning. And it might be that the term e-learning needs to just kind of be phased out. I think anybody that hears the term e-learning immediately has a perception of based on their own experiences. And most of the time our experiences are either fairly fairly neutral, you know, there's nothing exciting to report, or they're negative. And this is obviously a product of years and years of people just doing e-learnings. And I don't think using that term necessarily can change that perception now. I think we need to kind of move away from that. And e-learning is whatever we want it to be. It's essentially just electronic learning, digital learning. So I think we can start by just showing people what is possible, showing the thing that's, you know, that all singing or dancing e-learning that is completely the opposite end of the scale of what people are used to, and then filtering that down to make it seem more accessible and feasible. It definitely starts with learning and development teams wanting to make that change and not being scared of doing something a little bit different to the norm. We know from behaviour that there will be reluctance, and there will be people that will find it really just too much and too scary to kind of move things forward like that. But that's why I think it can start with just a really simple changes that can be made over time. For example, e-learnings that go in a linear format, you know, why don't you switch that up and allow the learner freedom to move through the e-learning as they please? If you've got e-learning and virtual classroom, why not add in a podcast for people to listen to if they want as well? So making those subtle changes and subtle moves forward can start to begin to change that perception of what we think of e-learning and digital learning. Because we, you know, if we add too much too soon, we're going to overwhelm people. And, you know, as we've touched on, people don't have the resource to suddenly start making these amazing videos in-house or to be recording podcasts in-house. Things like that will take time. But ultimately, as I kind of touched on with the e-learning developer role, it's about just having that curiosity of listening to the experts as well, you know, taking the time to talk to people in these fields and understanding what can be possible and what's suited to move their individual departments forward. Because it can be exciting. And I think part of this comes down to relevance as well. You know, we feel engaged and excited to do something when we feel we get something from it, when we benefit from it. So e-learning has to feel relevant and digital learning has to feel relevant for people to want to do it. And if people complete something that feels that they, you know, they they feel positively about it, they feel that it's benefited them in their career, that's going to generate that excitement and going to want to, it's going to encourage them to then go on and complete further training. So I think there's two responsibilities and mindset here. There's the mindset of us as learners to actually take some responsibility for our learning and to want to have this continuous learning and want to grow and develop as people, and not seeing just, you know, an e-learning or a face-to-face as the end of that learning, seeking out those YouTube videos or whatever to build on our skills. But it's also the learning and development department's responsibility to make people feel okay with the change and to show people why breaking out of this these traditional ways of learning can be a good thing, why it's exciting and why it can benefit them. Because I said, ultimately, if people aren't bought into a change, then they're not going to I could provide them with, you know, the well-designed e-learning that's been really thought through, but if they are already going into it with a mindset that it's something new and scary and different and they just don't want to engage with it, then it's pointless. So I think we just all need to kind of open our mind to the fact that we can't stop technology moving forward. We cannot stop the changes in the way people learn and the way people consume content. So instead of trying to push back against it, we need to take the positives and use them to also move things forward as well.
I think it comes down to raising awareness of that as well. So I personally think that we're always constantly learning, like you've touched on that as well, like from TikTok videos, YouTube videos, etc. And we're not necessarily aware that we are kind of taking on board that information as learning. I think, like you said, changing kind of that perception of an e-learning or an online course, just to kind of make people aware of, like, actually, if you are looking at a TED talk or if you are watching a YouTube video, you are taking in that information and that might be the right information. So it's about that curation side of things as well. And I think, yeah, like a shifting kind of mindset towards that would be good as well, that not just because it's not in an e-learning course or an online course, it doesn't mean that you're not learning something, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, it's people, there's been a big rise in the need for workplace learning at the moment, and people don't realize that, you know, if you're struggling to, like me when I first started my e-learning career, struggling to figure out how to do something technically, I went on YouTube and figured it out. That is learning, that is workplace learning. And yeah, as you've just said, it's changing that perception of what people think learning is, because we've been so long, especially in the corporate world, put in these boxes that learning has to be either a virtual classroom, face-to-face, or e-learning, and that is learning. It's allowing people to recognize that, yeah, you learn all day, every day, even if you don't realize that you're doing it, and you don't have to just get your knowledge from those three avenues, those three methods. There needs to be that support to pursue those other methods of learning as well.
It's definitely, and like you said about the generational bit as well, like the next generation coming into the workplace, they're not going to be used to going for a whole day to sit in a room and have nice cakes, you know what I mean? They're used to kind of getting their learning really quickly and promptly and then kind of moving on to the next thing. But I guess that comes back down to the purpose. Like you said, it has to be purposeful, and you don't want to be wasting people's time. Time is precious. So thank you very much for joining us today, Emma. So if people want to get in contact with you and follow your story, what should they do?
The best thing to do is to find me on LinkedIn under Emma Scott. I think my URL is Emma Louise Scott. Or you can follow us on Quantum Rise. Just search Quantum Rise Talent Group Limited. And we've got some really exciting things going on at the moment around leadership and around our learning space. So if you want to see, you know, a really sort of innovative and out there example of what e-learning can be, then I'd really recommend checking out that as well.
Awesome, that's great. We'll add those links into the show notes below. So thank you very much again.
Lovely, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.